The Valkyrie's engine screamed as we entered Catachon's atmosphere, the metal hull shuddering around us like it might tear apart at any moment. Sergeant Herrick's face remained impassive, weathered by decades of war across a dozen worlds. The rest of Basilisk's Venom sat in grim silence, each man checking his equipment with practiced precision. We were veterans all, except for our newest addition. Corporal Draz sat apart from us, his massive frame barely contained by the restraint harness. Even among the hulking soldiers of the Astra Militarum, a native Catachon jungle fighter stood out. His skin was a tapestry of scars and crude tattoos, muscles coiled like adamantium cables beneath a sleeveless flak vest. The standard issue gear we'd been assigned looked almost comically inadequate next to the massive, serrated knife strapped to his thigh. A Catachon fang, they called it, though it was closer to a sword than any knife I'd ever seen. Our mission briefing had been characteristically sparse. A strategic promethium refinery in the Northern Hemisphere was under attack. Initial reports suggested gene-stealer cult activity, but intelligence was fragmented. With the facility's strategic value to the Imperium, our squad had been cobbled together from various regiment veterans and assigned Draz as our guide. The Catachon 183rd was stretched thin across three subsectors, making specialist reinforcements impossible. Instead, they'd sent us expendable assets with enough experience to possibly survive. The Valkyrie lurched violently, throwing my head against the bulkhead. Warning klaxons blared through the compartment as red emergency lumens bathed us in crimson. Our pilot's voice crackled over the vox, the words lost beneath static and the howling of tortured engines. Through the viewport, I glimpsed the cause, a massive yellowish cloud engulfing our starboard wing. Draz's expression shifted from boredom to alarm. He unstrapped himself and moved to the viewport with surprising speed for his bulk. His face contorted into a mask of horror as he recognized what we'd flown into. The Catachon barked something at the pilot, gesturing frantically toward the spore cloud now enveloping the entire craft. Barking toads, even I knew about those, the most toxic creatures in the galaxy, capable of releasing a cloud of spores that could dissolve ceramite armor on contact. Pilot attempted evasive maneuvers, but it was too late. The engine sputtered and died as corrosive spores infiltrated the intake systems. We were going down. The impact came with a screeching of metal and the splintering of massive trees. I was thrown against my restraints, the breath knocked from my lungs. Darkness swallowed me momentarily, and when consciousness returned, the Valkyrie lay broken around us. Miraculously, the hull had remained largely intact, though the cockpit had been crushed upon impact. The pilots were dead. Sergeant Herrick was already moving, blood streaming from a gash on his forehead. He assessed our situation with veteran efficiency, checking each squad member for injuries. Private Krell had a broken arm and Specialist Thade was unconscious but breathing. The rest of us were battered but functional. Our Vox operator, Lentz, immediately attempted to establish communications with command, his fingers dancing across the portable unit salvaged from the wreckage. Outside, Catachon waited. The jungle pressed against the shattered viewports like a living entity, dense and primordial. The air that seeped through the breaches was thick with moisture and the sweet rot stench of decay. Draz examined our surroundings with narrowed eyes, his massive frame tense. He motioned to Herrick, indicating we needed to move. The Catachon's unease was infectious. If a man born to this hellscape was worried, we were in serious trouble. According to our nav systems, we crashed nearly 20 kilometers from our intended drop zone. The refinery might as well have been on another planet. Worse, the spore cloud that had brought us down was still visible in the distance, a yellow-green haze hovering between the towering megaflora. If the wind changed direction, we'd be dissolved where we stood. Herrick made his decision quickly. We salvaged what we could from the wreckage, weapons, ammunition, medical supplies, and emergency rations. The sergeant ordered a defensive perimeter established while Lentz continued attempting to reach command. The dense canopy overhead blocked most direct Vox transmissions, forcing him to boost the signal strength to dangerous levels. If there were enemies nearby, they'd hear us screaming into the void. After an hour of adjustments, Lentz finally established a fragmented connection with Imperial forces. The news was worse than we'd feared. The Genestealer cult uprising had escalated dramatically in the hours since our deployment. The refinery was under full assault, with cultists emerging from hidden enclaves throughout the surrounding jungle. But there was something else, strange biosignatures appearing on Auspex readings, inconsistent with known Genestealer cult organisms. Command was scrambling to respond, but reinforcements were at least 3 days out. We were on our own. As daylight began to fade, Draz's agitation grew more pronounced. The Catachan checked and rechecked his weapons, eyes constantly scanning the jungle's edge. Herrick ordered the establishment of a night camp within the broken Valkyrie. The hull would provide some protection, and we could use the wreckage to create a defensible position. The crashed transport became our fortress, with carefully positioned firing lanes and trip wire alarms fashioned from the craft's electrical systems. Draz shook his head at our preparations. The native fighter gestured toward the trees, then to his eyes and ears, trying to communicate something about the jungle's dangers. He produced a small container of foul-smelling paste from his kit and began applying it to exposed skin. Understanding dawned on Herrick, who ordered us all to do the same. The paste, Draz explained through crude hand gestures, would mask our scent from some predators. Night fell with terrifying swiftness. One moment the jungle was bathed in murky green twilight, the next, absolute darkness engulfed us. Our lumens cast weak halos that seemed to retreat from the oppressive blackness rather than penetrate it, and then the sounds began. Catachan's nocturnal predators announced themselves with a symphony of alien noises, clicking mandibles, slithering movements through undergrowth, and high-pitched wails that sounded disturbingly like human screams. Something massive moved past our position, its footfalls shaking the ground beneath the Valkyrie's hull. Draz identified it with a single word mouthed silently, devil, a Catachan devil, one of the planet's apex predators, large enough to swallow a man whole. The night stretched endlessly. We took watches in pairs, no one trusted to remain alert alone in this environment. The jungle's sounds grew closer, more curious. Shapes moved at the edge of our lumen's reach, some low to the ground, others swaying at impossible heights. Draz remained awake throughout, his massive frame silhouetted against the Valkyrie's emergency lighting, knife always in hand. During the third watch, Private Krell noticed something wrong. Two of our support personnel, Technician Varn and Medici Specialist Loris, were missing. Their sleeping positions were empty, bedrolls undisturbed. A quick search of the Valkyrie's interior revealed nothing. They had vanished without sound, without struggle, without triggering any of our carefully placed alarms. Herrick ordered an immediate headcount and equipment check. Nothing else was missing, not weapons, not supplies, just two men. Draz examined the perimeter with increasing agitation, finding no breach, no sign of entry. His expression told us everything we needed to know. Whatever had taken our comrades had done so with intelligence and purpose. The remaining hours until dawn passed in tense silence, weapons trained outward, backs pressed together. Sleep was impossible. The jungle continued its nocturnal chorus, occasionally punctuated by distant screams that might have been animals or might have been our missing men. Morning brought no relief. Sunlight filtered weakly through the canopy, revealing the true scale of the jungle surrounding us. Trees towered hundreds of meters overhead, their trunks wider than hab blocks. The ground teemed with insected life, creatures scuttling between massive roots and pools of stagnant water. Fungal growths pulsed with bioluminescence despite the daylight, their spores floating like miniature jellyfish through the humid air. Draz led us in a careful sweep around the crash site, searching for any sign of our missing comrades. The Catachan moved with surprising grace for his size, each step placed with deliberate care. He stopped us frequently to point out dangers, toxic flora, concealed pit traps formed by carnivorous plants, the telltale signs of burrowing parasites that could enter through boot seams and devour a man from the inside out. We found nothing of Varn or Loris, no blood, no equipment, no signs of struggle. They had simply ceased to exist, extracted from our midst by the jungle itself. Herrick made the practical decision to list them as casualties and continue our mission. The refinery remained our objective, even if the path there now seemed impossibly treacherous. Lentz established another brief Vox connection with command. The situation at the refinery had deteriorated further. The Genestealer cult had taken the lower levels, and Imperial forces were barely maintaining control of the processing facilities. More disturbing were the reports of hybrid forms never before documented, creatures that seemed to incorporate aspects of native Catachan fauna into their physiologies. Something was happening beyond typical Genestealer infiltration. Herrick studied our tactical display, plotting a route through the jungle that might offer some protection while leading us toward the refinery. Draz shook his head at each proposed path, finally taking the date a slate and marking a circuitous route that would add days to our journey but apparently avoided the worst dangers. The sergeant reluctantly agreed, deferring to the Catachan's knowledge of his homeworld. As we prepared to move out, I noticed something disturbing near the edge of our camp. A small patch of vegetation had changed overnight, the plants growing in unnatural patterns, their structures subtly altered. They resembled nothing in the Imperial biological databases I'd studied during preparation for this mission. When I approached for a closer look, Draz yanked me back with surprising force, his face a mask of concern. He gestured for me to watch as he tossed a spent power cell toward the plants. The vegetation moved. Tendrils whipped out with lightning speed, enveloping the metal cylinder and dragging it into the mass of leaves. Seconds later, the power cell was ejected, its casing partially dissolved, strange symbols etched into the remaining surface. The plants hadn't been there the previous day. They had grown overnight, directed by some intelligence placed specifically at the edge of our camp. We were being watched, studied, tested. By what I couldn't say, gene stealers, native fauna, or something worse. But as we shouldered our equipment and prepared to enter the true depths of Catachan's jungle, one thing became horrifyingly clear: we weren't the hunters here. We were prey, moving deeper into a predator's domain with each step. Dawn broke reluctantly through Catachan's dense canopy as we prepared to move out. The wreckage of our Valkyrie, our temporary sanctuary, would soon be swallowed by the jungle, its metal bones picked clean by corrosive spores and acid-secreting fungi. Sergeant Herrick checked his data slate one final time, confirming our heading toward the distant refinery while Draz surveyed the treeline with narrowed eyes. The Catachan moved with purpose, his massive frame gliding between fern clusters that towered above our heads. We followed in tight formation, boots sinking into loamy soil that seemed to breathe beneath us. The air hung thick with moisture, filling our lungs with each labored breath. My flak armor, already uncomfortable, chafed against sweat-soaked skin as we pushed deeper into the green hell. Draz halted us frequently, his raised fist becoming our lifeline. Each time he pointed out some nearly invisible threat, a patch of innocent-looking moss that would dissolve flesh on contact, or the telltale ripple of soil indicating a Catachan barking toad buried beneath. The natives' knowledge kept us alive through that first morning, though the constant stops stretched our nerves to breaking point. By midday, the character of the jungle had changed subtly. The vegetation grew more dense, more vibrant, almost pulsing with unnatural vitality. Vines hung in complex geometric patterns that seemed deliberately placed rather than random. Draz noticed it too, his pace slowing as he examined these anomalies with growing concern. The first spiker vine caught Private Thade by the ankle. The barbed tendril whipped around his leg with shocking speed, yanking him off balance before anyone could react. Draz was there in an instant, his Catachan fang slicing through the vine with practiced efficiency. The severed plant appendage writhed on the ground, oozing yellowish sap that smoked when it touched the soil. Spiker vines were well-documented hazards on Catachan, but Draz's reaction told me something was wrong. He examined the cut end of the tendril, rubbing the sap between his fingers and sniffing it cautiously. His expression darkened. Through hand signals, he indicated that something about this specimen was different, wrong. The vine hadn't been hanging passively as spikers typically did. It had been coiled in ambush, positioned precisely at ankle height along our path. We proceeded with heightened caution, eyes scanning the vegetation for similar threats. Within the next kilometer, we encountered five more spiker vine clusters, each arranged in what could only be described as deliberate hunting formations, some creating trip lines across game trails, others forming funnel patterns that would herd prey toward concealed vine masses. Most disturbing was their coloration. The typical mottled brown of spiker vines had given way to an almost translucent quality, with visible vascular systems pulsing beneath the surface. Callan, our Vox operator, halted abruptly during our careful advance. He adjusted the settings on his equipment, head tilted as he fine-tuned the reception. Something had caught his attention, faint transmissions breaking through the atmospheric interference. The rest of us formed a protective perimeter while he worked, Draz prowling the edges with predatory vigilance. After several minutes of adjustments, fragments of Imperial communications emerged from the static. The transmissions weren't from the refinery as expected, but from a location approximately 3 kilometers east of our position. The fragmented messages contained disturbing references, mentions of Specimen Omega, and containment breach, punctuated by garbled emergency protocols. Most alarming was a partial transmission from what sounded like Omega's biologist, frantically reporting prohibited Xeno's botanical hybridization before dissolving into screams and static. Sergeant Herrick consulted his tactical map, confirming what we all suspected. There was no official Imperial outpost marked at those coordinates. Draz nodded grimly, gesturing toward the east with a knowing look. The Catachan had been aware of the Mechanicus' presence, though it clearly wasn't common knowledge even among Imperial forces. Whatever research they'd been conducting had apparently escaped containment. We debated altering our course to investigate, but Herrick ultimately decided against it. Primary mission remained reaching the refinery. Still, the transmissions added a new dimension of dread to our trek. The jungle around us wasn't just naturally hostile. Something had been tampered with, modified, perhaps weaponized. As afternoon faded toward evening, we encountered a small stream that cut through our path. According to Draz's guidance, following it for several kilometers would lead us to a more manageable river crossing than attempting to forge directly through the densest sections of jungle. The water ran clear, but with an iridescent sheen that suggested mineral content beyond normal parameters. We hadn't gone far along the streambed when Draz froze, dropping into a crouch. Ahead, partially concealed by massive fern fronds, lay the unmistakable remains of an Imperial patrol. The bodies, or what was left of them, were scattered across a small clearing. Their Cadian pattern flak armor confirmed they weren't local Catachan troops, but likely another special detachment like ours. Approaching cautiously, the full horror of the scene became apparent. The dead soldiers hadn't simply been killed, they had been transformed. Plant matter had fused with their flesh in grotesque symbiosis, with vines threading through eye sockets and fungal growths erupting from chest cavities. One corpse had been split from sternum to groin, a sapling growing from within the hollowed torso, its leaves the same crimson shade as dried blood. My first thought was Nurgle's corruption. I'd seen similar abominations on plague-touched worlds. Herrick evidently shared my assessment, ordering us to check for warp signatures using the detection equipment we carried, but Draz was already shaking his head vehemently, gesturing at specific aspects of the growth patterns. The Catachan's expression conveyed absolute certainty that this was something indigenous, something ancient that his people knew and feared. Through crude pictographs scratched into the soil and simplified low Gothic, Draz communicated a tribal legend, the Green Maw, an entity that supposedly dwelled in Catachan's deepest jungles. Not a creature in conventional terms, but a dispersed consciousness that could manifest through the planet's flora, absorbing and incorporating the genetic material of its prey to evolve continuously. The tribes avoided certain regions entirely because of this entity, considering them taboo even on a world where every square meter already promised death. Herrick ordered us to salvage any functional equipment from the dead patrol and move on quickly. None of us needed convincing. The sight radiated wrongness beyond the obvious horror of the corpses. As we carefully retrieved ammunition and a functional auspex from the remains, I noticed something troubling. The plant matter infesting the bodies was already beginning to creep toward our boot prints in the soft earth, tendrils extending with visible purpose. We pushed on at an accelerated pace, following the stream as it widened gradually into a slow-moving river. Massive trees lined both banks, their root systems forming tangled lattices that dipped into the murky water. According to Draz's calculations, crossing here would save us nearly a day's journey compared to following the watercourse to a natural ford. Specialist Vex, our combat engineer, quickly assembled a rudimentary raft from fallen timber and vines under Draz's guidance. The Catachan selected materials carefully, rejecting certain plants that appeared identical to my untrained eye, but apparently possessed properties that would attract unwanted attention in the water. The crossing began without incident. Herrick ordered us across in groups of three, with Draz leading the first team to secure the opposite bank. The native warrior moved through the water with practiced efficiency, eyes constantly scanning the surface for ripples or shadows beneath. The first group reached the far side without incident, establishing a defensive position as the second team prepared to cross. I was part of the third group, along with Callan and Specialist Grell, our heavy weapons expert. Grell's massive frame was further burdened by his heavy bolter, the weapon nearly as large as Draz himself. We waited tensely as the second group navigated the slow current, the raft barely visible now in the fading light. The attack came without warning. The water around the second group's raft erupted as dozens of creatures breached the surface simultaneously. Catechon face eaters, carnivorous amphibians the size of dinner plates, with circular maws lined with concentric rows of teeth. Normally solitary ambush predators, these moved with coordinated precision that chilled my blood. The face eaters swarmed the raft in organized waves, some latching onto the structure itself while others launched themselves at the soldiers with impossible accuracy. Private Lorne screamed as three of the creatures attached themselves to his face and neck, their teeth boring through flesh with horrifying efficiency. The water around the raft churned red as more face eaters responded to the blood scent. Herrick ordered immediate covering fire from both banks. Lasgun beams cut through the twilight, vaporizing dozens of the creatures, but for each one killed, three more surfaced. Their behavior defied everything recorded about the species. They moved in tactical formations, sacrificing some of their numbers to draw our fire while others targeted the raft's bindings. Grell shouldered his heavy bolter, the weapon's massive barrel tracking the main concentration of face eaters. The thunderous roar of mass reactive shells tore through the swarm, obliterating dozens in explosive bursts that sent water and viscera skyward. For a moment it seemed the tide had turned. Then the water beneath our feet began to shift. The bank where we stood wasn't solid ground but a partially submerged mass of vegetation, and it was moving. Face eaters erupted from hidden pockets beneath the surface, dozens latching onto Grell's legs before any of us could react. The heavy weapons specialist fired continuously, his bolter cutting swathes through the creatures even as they dragged him inexorably toward deeper water. Callan and I grabbed Grell's harness, trying to anchor him against the pull. The specialist's massive frame gave us momentary advantage, but more face eaters joined the assault, forming living chains that multiplied their strength. Grell shoved us back with one powerful arm, his face set in grim determination. The heavy weapons specialist understood what we all knew. If we didn't break contact, we'd all be dragged under. Grell continued firing as the face eaters pulled him into the river, the muzzle flashes illuminating swarms of the creatures in the deepening darkness. His heavy bolter roared defiance until the water reached his chest, and still he fired, the weapons machine spirit singing its destructive hymn as its wielder was submerged. Bubbles and blood marked his passage beneath the surface, along with the underwater flashes of bolter rounds detonating among the swarm. The river settled into unnatural stillness moments later. The remaining face eaters retreated, disappearing beneath the murky surface with the same coordinated precision they'd shown during the attack. The second group's shattered raft drifted downstream, carrying only corpses. Of the four men who had been aboard, none remained alive. Herrick signaled retreat from the river, abandoning the crossing attempt. We pulled back into the jungle, establishing a defensive perimeter 100 meters from the water's edge. The sergeant's face was granite as he assessed our losses, 5 men dead, including our heavy weapons capability with Grell. Our effective combat strength had been reduced by nearly half since the crash landing. As night fell completely, Draz's agitation grew more pronounced. The Catechon examined the surrounding vegetation with increasing alarm, touching certain leaves and smelling the sap of others. Something in our environment had changed during our absence. The jungle had shifted subtly, plants repositioning themselves in ways that defied natural growth patterns. The green maw was no longer a tribal legend or distant threat. It was active, aware, and hunting us with methodical patience. The face eaters had been tools, their unnatural coordination evidence of external control. More disturbing was the implication that the entity could absorb and implement tactical knowledge from the Imperial Patrol it had consumed earlier. As we huddled in our hasty perimeter, surrounded by detection equipment and motion sensors, a new reality settled over us like Catechon's oppressive humidity. We weren't simply traversing hostile territory to reach the refinery anymore. We were being herded, manipulated by something that used the entire jungle as its body and mind. The refinery, our original objective, now represented our only hope of survival, a bastion of rockcrete and steel in a living hell that grew more intelligent and hostile with each imperial life it consumed. Whether Genestealer cult or ancient vegetative entity awaited us there, at least it would be an enemy we could face directly, rather than this omnipresent green death that watched us from every leaf and vine. We emerged from the dense jungle canopy onto a ridge that overlooked the Promethium refinery. The massive industrial complex sprawled across the cleared valley floor, its metal structures gleaming dully in Catachan's hazy sunlight. Smoke billowed from several damaged sections, and even from our elevated position, I could make out signs of battle around the perimeter. Sergeant Herrick signaled for us to take cover as he surveyed the facility through magnoculars. His weathered face revealed nothing, but the tension in his shoulders told me what we all suspected: something was terribly wrong. The expected signs of Genestealer cult activity were present: makeshift barricades, defaced Imperial iconography, but the cultists themselves were conspicuously absent from the defensive positions. Draz crouched beside me, his massive frame impossibly still as he studied the refinery with narrowed eyes. The Catachan's nostrils flared slightly, testing the air like a predator. He gestured toward the eastern perimeter fence, where a section had been torn outward rather than inward. The implication was clear: whatever battle had occurred here, the cultists had been trying to escape the facility, not infiltrate it. We advanced cautiously down the ridge, using the sparse cover of boulder formations and stunted trees. As we drew closer to the perimeter, the first bodies became visible. Cult members lay scattered across the ground in twisted poses of agony, their hybrid forms made even more grotesque by what had happened to them after death. Parasitic plant growth erupted from chest cavities and eye sockets, delicate tendrils forming complex patterns across the corpse's skin. The vegetation wasn't consuming the bodies, it was growing from within them. Callan activated his auspex, scanning for life signs as we approached the perimeter fence. The readings were confusing, diffused biological signatures that seemed to shift and flow rather than register as distinct entities. The fence itself had been compromised in multiple locations, with entire sections torn away by what appeared to be tremendous force applied from inside the compound. Herrick made the decision to enter through the main gate rather than the breaches. Standard protocol when dealing with unknown threats: better to use established entry points than crawl through potentially trapped or compromised areas. The massive reinforced doors hung partially open, their locking mechanisms shattered from within. The guard post was empty, though dried blood splattered the walls and floor in patterns that suggested extreme violence. Inside the perimeter, the refinery's true state became apparent. The outer industrial sections showed signs of desperate fighting. Las burns scored the walls, improvised barricades created from machinery parts spent bolt casings littering the ground. But the battle had clearly moved inward, toward the central administrative and control buildings. Following this path of destruction, we encountered more cult corpses, all displaying the same internal plant growth. Some were further along in the process, with flowering buds erupting from split ribcages and vines extending from severed limbs to root in the ground. Draz stopped abruptly as we approached a junction between two processing buildings. The Catachan's massive hand shot out, halting our advance as he pointed to the ground. Almost invisible against the metal decking were fine green filaments stretching across our path like a web. Herrick knelt to examine them, careful not to make contact. The strands appeared to pulse with microscopic movement, carrying fluid along their length toward the central facility. We detoured around the filament web, following a maintenance access route that showed fewer signs of battle. The relative calm was more unnerving than the chaos we'd left behind. Functional lumens still cast cold light across empty corridors, and the background hum of operational machinery created an illusion of normalcy that set my nerves on edge. The central control building loomed ahead, its reinforced structure designed to withstand the harshest of Catachan's environmental assaults. The entrance was sealed, emergency lockdown protocols apparently activated during whatever catastrophe had befallen the refinery. Callan accessed the security panel, his tech knowledge allowing him to bypass the basic systems. The massive doors slid open with a pneumatic hiss, revealing the darkened interior. Our lumen beams cut through the gloom, illuminating a reception area that had been converted into a defensive position. Overturned furniture and hastily erected barricades created a killing ground focused on the main entrance where we now stood, but no shots greeted us. The defenders, a mix of refinery security personnel and what appeared to be Mechanicus troops, lay dead at their posts. Unlike the cultists outside, these bodies showed no signs of internal plant growth. Instead, they appeared to have been killed by conventional weapons, Laws burns, bolt rounds, and in some cases, the distinctive wounds of Tyranid bioweapons. Herrick directed us to secure the area while he and Callan accessed the facility's central cogitator. The system was still operational, running on emergency power. Callan's fingers danced across the interface, bypassing security protocols to access the command logs. The data painted a horrifying picture of the refinery's final hours. The facility had indeed been infiltrated by a gene-stealer cult months earlier, but that wasn't what had caused its downfall. The logs revealed that a Mechanicus research team led by Mago's biologist Hexatrix had established a secret laboratory in the refinery's lower levels. Their project, designated Adaptive Xenoflora Integration, involved combining Catachon plant DNA with recovered Tyranid biomorphic samples, specifically those with neural control capabilities. The goal had been to create biological weapons that could target specific genetic markers, Tyranid organisms, for instance, while leaving Imperial citizens unharmed. What they created instead was something far worse, a hybrid organism capable of controlling other plant life and assimilating any biological material it encountered. The logs contained frantic notes about exponential growth rates and unexpected neural complexity. The final entries detailed the entity's escape from containment and its rapid spread throughout the facility's hydroponic systems. Most disturbing were Hexatrix's observations that the hybrid organism appeared to be communicating with Catachon's native flora through unknown means, creating a network that extended beyond the facility's walls. The Magos had theorized that they had not created something new, but rather awakened something dormant within Catachon's ecosystem, something ancient that had been waiting for the specific genetic catalyst they had unwittingly provided. As we processed this information, the facility's automated systems suddenly activated around us. Warning klaxons blared through the corridors, and emergency lumens bathed everything in pulsing red light. A mechanical voice announced containment protocols were being initiated in multiple sectors, including promethium purging procedures. The refinery's automated defense systems had detected the spreading contamination and were preparing to sterilize affected areas with controlled promethium burns. Herrick made a rapid assessment of our situation. The data logs indicated two critical objectives: securing an escape vehicle from the refinery's transport bay and activating the facility's self-destruct protocols to ensure complete destruction of the hybrid organism. With the automated purging systems already activating, we had limited time to accomplish both tasks. The sergeant divided our remaining forces. He would lead half the team, including Callan and our remaining heavy weapons specialist, to secure the transport bay on the western edge of the facility. Draz would guide me and the others to the emergency control center where the self-destruct protocols could be initiated. The Catachon's knowledge of the facility's layout was unexpected, raising questions about his true purpose here, but there was no time to interrogate him. We separated at a junction, Herrick's team heading west while we followed Draz deeper into the facility's core. The Catachon moved with purpose, navigating the labyrinthine corridors with the confidence of someone following a memorized path. Behind us, the sounds of igniting promethium and the whoosh of controlled fire filled the corridors we just vacated. The purging had begun. Draz led us down a maintenance shaft that bypassed several sealed sections. The tight confines forced us to move in single file, the Catachon's broad shoulders nearly scraping both walls. The shaft opened into a lower level that showed no signs of battle, but disturbing evidence of the hybrid organism's spread. The walls were lined with pulsing green filaments similar to those we'd seen outside, but here they had formed complex patterns that resembled circuit boards or neural networks. The emergency control center was located at the end of a reinforced corridor. The massive blast door stood partially open, jammed by the body of a Mechanicus tech priest who had apparently died trying to reach it. Draz moved the corpse with surprising gentleness, allowing us to squeeze through the gap into the control center beyond. The room was dominated by a central console array surrounding a hololithic projection unit. The systems were still active, displaying real-time data about the facility's deteriorating condition. Most disturbing was the biological contamination map, showing the hybrid organisms spread throughout not just the refinery, but into the surrounding jungle for several kilometers in all directions. As we approached the central console, Draz's demeanor changed. The Catachan's usual stoic expression gave way to something resembling religious reverence. He placed his hand on the console, fingers moving across the interface with unexpected familiarity. A series of classified files appeared on the main display, data that should have been inaccessible to anyone without highest-level Mechanicus authorization. The truth of Draz's presence became clear as he accessed these files. He hadn't been assigned to our mission by chance or due to his knowledge of Catachan's dangers. He was an agent of his tribe, specifically sent to ensure the destruction of what they called the Green Maw. The Catachan's people had ancient legends about a sentient jungle entity that awakened every few millennia to consume all life on the planet before returning to dormancy. Their oral histories recorded previous awakenings and the devastating consequences for all of Catachan's inhabitants. The Mechanicus experiments had provided the catalyst for a premature awakening, accelerating a natural cycle and potentially creating a threat that could extend beyond Catachan itself. Draz's tribe had infiltrated the refinery months ago, placing him as a sleeper agent within Imperial forces. His mission was simple: ensure the complete destruction of the Green Maw's heart, which the Mechanicus had unwittingly cultivated in their laboratories beneath the refinery. The self-destruct protocols were complex, requiring simultaneous activation from multiple stations. With our reduced numbers, this presented a significant challenge. Draz indicated that he could bypass some of the safety measures, but one of us would need to remain in the control center to complete the activation sequence while others reached auxiliary stations in different sections of the facility. As we prepared to split up again, the facility shuddered around us. The promethium purging protocols had reached a critical storage area, triggering secondary explosions that threatened the structural integrity of the entire complex. Warning indicators flashed across the control consoles, showing rapidly escalating damage throughout the refinery. More alarming were the biological readings from the lower laboratories. The hybrid organism was responding to the threat, concentrating its mass and accelerating its growth rate. The hololithic display showed something massive forming in the chambers below us, a central node or brain that was directing the spreading filaments throughout the facility and beyond. Draz studied these readings with grim determination. The Catachan's tribal knowledge had prepared him for this moment. He accessed a sealed weapons locker using codes displayed in the classified files, revealing a prototype weapon developed by the Mechanicus researchers, a modified flamer that dispensed a chemical compound specifically designed to destroy the hybrid organism's cellular structure. Time was running out. The facility's automated systems indicated complete structural failure within 30 minutes. The self-destruct protocols would need to be activated before then to ensure complete destruction of the organism. Herrick's team reported they had secured a transport, a rugged Mechanicus exploration vehicle with enough space for our remaining squad members, but they were cut off from our position by spreading fires and collapsing sections. The Green Maw was aware of our plans. The neural filaments throughout the facility pulsed with increased activity, and security systems began malfunctioning as the organism interfaced with the refinery's machine spirits. Blast doors sealed randomly, cutting off escape routes and trapping us in progressively smaller sections of the facility. Draz made his decision without hesitation. The Catachan would descend to the lower laboratories alone, carrying the prototype weapon to destroy the organism's central mass. The rest of us would split up to reach the auxiliary control stations, activate the self-destruct sequence, and then make our way to the extraction point where Herrick waited with the transport. As Draz prepared to leave, he revealed one final piece of information. The Green Maw wasn't simply a threat to Catachan. The Mechanicus data showed it had incorporated Tyranid adaptation capabilities from their experiments. If allowed to reach maturity, it could potentially develop spore-based reproduction methods that would allow it to spread off-world. What had begun as a localized awakening of an ancient planetary entity now threatened to become a galaxy-wide biological catastrophe. The refinery shuddered again as another storage tank ruptured, sending tremors through the floor beneath our feet. The countdown to both structural collapse and our manually activated destruction was beginning, with the Green Maw racing to achieve critical mass before we could end its existence. As we parted ways in that control center, I realized that our original mission, investigating a simple gene-stealer cult uprising, had led us into a confrontation with something far older and more terrible than the Imperium had ever suspected lurked in Catachan's endless jungles. The facility's central landing pad loomed before us as we emerged from the maintenance corridors, our boots clanging against metal grating still slick with the blood of those who had fallen defending it. Hope surged briefly at the sight of three Arvis lighters positioned on the pad, our potential salvation from this green hell. That hope died as quickly as it had formed. The vessels were still intact, but utterly unusable. Writhing plant matter had enveloped the ships, anchoring them to the landing pad with thick, ropey tendrils that pulsed with sickly bioluminescence. As we watched, one of the craft's hull plates buckled under the immense pressure, the metal shrieking as it gave way. Vine-like appendages slithered through the breach, probing the interior spaces with disturbing purpose. These weren't random growths, they moved with deliberate intelligence, searching for something. Sergeant Herrick signaled for us to fall back into the relative shelter of the corridor entrance. The veteran's face remained impassive, but I could read the grim calculation in his eyes as he assessed our rapidly diminishing options. With our extraction point compromised, we had nowhere to go but deeper into the facility, toward the heart of the infestation. Callan consulted his data slate, the glow illuminating his sweat-streaked features as he pulled up the refinery's schematics. The facility's core housed the primary plasma reactors that powered the entire operation, massive fusion engines that channeled enough energy to level everything within a 5-kilometer radius if their containment fields failed. Herrick studied the layout, his decision already forming before Callan finished his explanation. We would trigger a catastrophic reactor meltdown. It was the only way to ensure complete destruction of the hybrid organism. The journey to the reactor core took us through increasingly compromised sections of the facility. The Green Maw had concentrated its growth around critical systems, almost as if it understood the refinery's infrastructure. Corridors that had been clear minutes before were now choked with pulsating vegetable matter that parted reluctantly before Draz's Catachan Fang, only to begin regrowing behind us. The organism was learning, adapting to our movements with each encounter. The reactor control chamber was a cathedral to technology, soaring ceilings filled with coolant pipes and power conduits, banks of cogitators monitoring the titanic energies contained within the plasma cores. Unlike the rest of the facility, this space remained relatively untouched by the infestation. The machine's spirits here were older, more powerful, less susceptible to the organism's influence. Nevertheless, fine green filaments had begun creeping across the floor from ventilation ducts and access panels, the first tendrils of invasion. Herrick moved directly to the main control throne, brushing aside the desiccated remains of a tech priest still clutching a mechadendrite to his chest. The sergeant's knowledge of reactor systems surprised me until I remembered his service record mentioned deployment on void ships during the Gothic Sector conflicts. His fingers moved with practiced efficiency across the ancient keys, bypassing safety protocols and authentication requirements through sheer brute force overrides. Warning runes flashed crimson across the displays as the reactor's machine spirit recognized the violation of its operating parameters. Klaxons wailed throughout the chamber, their urgent tones mixing with the deeper, more ominous rumble of the reactors beginning their unstable cycle. Herrick continued his work, face illuminated by the flickering emergency lumens as he systematically disabled each failsafe mechanism designed to prevent exactly what we were attempting. The final override required continuous manual input, a deliberate design feature to prevent remote tampering. Someone would need to remain at the controls, constantly countering the machine's spirit's attempts to stabilize itself until the reaction became truly irreversible. Herrick's expression didn't change as he explained this through terse hand signals. He had already accepted the necessity of his sacrifice. Draz watched this process with unexpected intensity, his massive frame unnaturally still. The Catachan approached the control throne, examining the displays with a knowledge that seemed incongruous with his feral appearance. Something passed between the native warrior and Herrick, an unspoken communication between men who understood the weight of necessary sacrifice. The sergeant nodded once, acknowledging whatever silent message had been conveyed. The facility shuddered around us as the reactor's containment fields began fluctuating. We had perhaps 20 minutes before complete system failure, barely enough time to reach minimum safe distance, if such a thing even existed on this emperor-forsaken planet. Herrick motioned for us to prepare for evacuation while he continued the override sequence. It was then that Draz revealed what he had been concealing since our first encounter in the jungle. The Catachan drew a small, leather-bound pouch from beneath his flak vest, carefully unwrapping it to expose a vial of cloudy liquid. Through quick, efficient gestures, he explained what the tribal elders had provided him before his infiltration mission. His blood, like that of certain Catachan tribal bloodlines, contained natural toxins evolved over millennia of exposure to the planet's most lethal flora. These compounds, refined through ancient methods, could potentially poison the central node of the Green Maw if delivered directly to its core. The plan crystallized with brutal simplicity. The reactor meltdown would destroy the physical manifestation of the organism, but without targeting its central neural node, there remained a risk of regeneration from surviving tendrils beyond the blast radius. Draz would locate this node, which their tribal lore suggested would be drawn to the reactor's energy during the meltdown process, and introduce his toxic blood directly into its system. Herrick's objections were immediate and vehement, conveyed through sharp gestures that required no translation. The plan was suicide with no guarantee of success. The sergeant pointed to the reactor controls, indicating that his sacrifice was already sufficient. We needed Draz's knowledge to navigate the jungle if any of us were to survive the coming detonation. The Catachan remained unmoved. With deliberate movements, he removed his combat harness and drew his massive knife. The blade gleamed in the emergency lighting as he pressed it against his own chest, demonstrating his intent. He would not merely deliver the toxin, he would offer his entire body as the delivery mechanism, allowing the organism to consume him so that his blood would spread throughout its central nervous system. Time was slipping away as the reactor's warning signals intensified. The decision could not be delayed any longer. Herrick finally nodded, acknowledging the necessity of both sacrifices. The sergeant would remain to ensure the meltdown proceeded, while Draz would seek out the organism's heart. The rest of us had one final mission, to escape with the knowledge of what had happened here, to ensure the Imperium understood the threat that might one day resurface. Our path to potential safety lay through the maintenance tunnels that connected the reactor complex to an emergency bunker 1 kilometer from the facility perimeter. If we could reach it before detonation, the reinforced structure might provide enough protection to survive the initial blast. After that, we would face Catachan's jungle once more, but at least the immediate threat of the Green Maw would be eliminated. As we prepared to separate, Draz approached each of us in turn, pressing something into our hands. Seed pods, unremarkable brown spheres that resembled nothing more than dried fruit. The Catachan indicated through gestures that these were to be consumed if we survived the explosion. They contained compounds that would temporarily render our blood toxic to any remaining fragments of the organism we might encounter during our escape. His final gift was a crude map scratched onto a piece of torn fabric, showing a route to a tribal settlement where we might find assistance. Herrick remained at the control throne, his attention now fully focused on countering the machine, Spirit's increasingly desperate attempts to prevent catastrophic failure. The sergeant didn't look up as we made our final preparations to leave. His duty was clear, his sacrifice already accepted. The only acknowledgement came in the form of the Aquila sign made briefly against his chest, not a request for the Emperor's protection, but a final affirmation of faith in humanity's ultimate survival. Draz's departure was equally stoic. The massive Catachan simply nodded once, then turned toward the access shaft that would lead him to the lower levels where the organism's central mass had been detected. The native warrior moved with purpose, his Catachan fang held ready as he disappeared into the darkness. The last glimpse I caught was of his broad back, the tribal tattoos across his shoulders seeming to writhe in the flickering emergency lights, a predator descending willingly into the maw of a greater beast. Our remaining team, now reduced to just 4 men, entered the maintenance tunnel as the facility's structural integrity warnings reached critical levels. The narrow passage forced us into single file, our lumen beams cutting weak paths through dust-filled darkness. Behind us, the reactor's containment alarms grew fainter with distance, though the periodic tremors shaking the tunnel walls reminded us of the imminent destruction. We had covered perhaps half the distance to the emergency bunker when the tremors intensified dramatically. The tunnel ceiling shed fragments of rockcrete and metal, forcing us to shield our heads as we continued forward. Through the vibrations in the floor grating, I could feel the reactor's machine spirit fighting against Herrick's overrides, the massive energies within becoming increasingly unstable. The Vox unit at my hip crackled suddenly to life, not with words, but with a series of measured clicks. A coded message from Herrick, using an old Imperial Guard battle cant that veteran units employed when standard communications were compromised. The sergeant was confirming that the meltdown had reached the point of no return. We had less than 5 minutes to reach shelter. Our pace increased to a desperate sprint, equipment banging against our armor as we abandoned caution in favor of speed. The tunnel began to slope upward, indicating our approach to the surface bunker. Ahead, a reinforced blast door marked our destination, the emergency shelter designed to protect critical personnel during catastrophic refinery failures. The bunker interior was austere but intact, emergency lighting still functioning, air filtration systems humming efficiently. We sealed the blast door behind us, engaging the ancient locking mechanisms that would hopefully withstand the coming destruction. Through the bunker's limited monitoring systems, we could track the reactor's final moments as energy levels spiked beyond all sustainable parameters. In those final seconds before detonation, the monitoring system briefly detected an anomaly in the facility's lowest level. A massive concentration of biological material had converged around something registering as a human life sign. Draz had found the heart of the organism and was completing his mission. The readings showed a sudden spike in toxic compounds spreading throughout the biological mass, the Catachon's blood releasing its deadly payload into the creature's system. The detonation, when it came, exceeded all predicted parameters. The monitoring systems failed instantly as the blast wave struck the bunker, the reinforced structure shuddering under forces it had never been designed to withstand. Emergency systems activated automatically, sealing breaches and rerouting power to maintain life support. We were thrown to the floor as the ground itself seemed to buckle beneath the bunker's foundations. For nearly 10 minutes, the world outside ceased to exist for us. The bunker systems reported external temperatures exceeding those of a star's surface, radiation levels that would have killed unprotected humans in seconds, and pressure waves that flattened everything within the blast radius. When the initial fury subsided, the monitoring systems cautiously extended external sensors to assess the aftermath. The refinery was gone, not merely destroyed, but effectively erased from existence. In its place was a crater nearly 3 kilometers wide, its edges still glowing with residual heat. The surrounding jungle had been flattened for kilometers beyond that, trees reduced to ash and bedrock scoured clean of all life. The plasma reactor's death had been absolute in its purifying destruction. More importantly, the sensors detected no signs of the hybrid organism's distinctive energy patterns. The combination of Draz's toxic blood and the plasma detonation had accomplished what neither could have achieved alone: complete destruction of the Green Maw's physical manifestation and its central neural network. We remained in the bunker for 3 days, allowing the worst of the radiation to dissipate before attempting to leave. The emergency supplies provided basic sustenance and medical treatment for our injuries, but nothing could address the hollow knowledge that our survival had been purchased with the deliberate sacrifice of 2 men. Herrick and Draz had given themselves fully, without hesitation or regret, in service to a duty that transcended personal survival. When we finally emerged, the landscape was unrecognizable. The lush, deadly jungle had been replaced by a wasteland of ash and vitrified soil that stretched to the horizon. Nothing moved across this desolation. No predators, no insects, not even the wind seemed willing to touch this purged ground. Following Draz's crude map would be impossible now, with all landmarks erased by the blast. Our only option was to activate the bunker's emergency beacon, and hoped that Imperial forces would investigate the massive energy signature the detonation had surely registered on monitoring stations. As we prepared the ancient equipment, something caught my attention at the crater's distant edge, a faint green shimmer that didn't match the ash-gray devastation surrounding it. Through magnoculars, I could just make out what appeared to be new growth, tiny shoots of vegetation emerging from the scorched earth. At this distance, it was impossible to determine whether this represented normal jungle regeneration or something more sinister. The possibility that fragments of the organism had survived, that spores might have been carried beyond the blast radius by the initial shock wave, could not be dismissed. As the emergency beacon began its steady pulse into the void, we stood watching that distant green line on the horizon. The immediate threat had been contained through blood and sacrifice, but Catachan's secrets were ancient and patient. Whether the green maw had been truly destroyed or merely forced back into dormancy remained to be seen. What was certain was that Herrick and Draz had bought the Imperium time to prepare, to understand, perhaps even to develop more permanent countermeasures against the horror that had awakened in this planet's endless green hell. The knowledge we carried was now our burden and our duty, to ensure that their sacrifice would not be forgotten or rendered meaningless. As a distant Imperial shuttle finally appeared in the ash-filled sky 3 days later, I swallowed Draz's seed pod, feeling the bitter compound spread through my system. Whatever fragments of the organism might remain would find no easy host in my blood, the Catachan's final gift ensuring that we carried warning rather than contagion back to the wider Imperium. The Emperor protects, but sometimes his protection comes through the willing sacrifice of his finest servants. In the scorched wasteland of what had once been impenetrable jungle, that truth had never been more evident or more costly.